I thought I'd try something a little bit different this time. That was the choir at St. Mark's Episcopal Church last Sunday, April 28th. The piece is All Shall Be Amen and Alleluia by James Whitburn. And it's one of the less common anthems that we do. And I was pretty proud of the way that we sounded. I hope the sound came through okay. Anyway, I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show. And we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Also at revolution.radio. And also at newdream.us, our show's website, where you can also listen to our archives. It is my privilege now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. Tonight we welcome these special guests, Mickey Z, Hava Bird, Frank Cordero, and Phil Ferruzio. So this Thursday evening we are gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Duluth, in Baltimore, Maryland, in Port Orange, Florida, in Los Angeles, California, in Astoria, Queens, New York City, and wherever you are. The final book in the Geronimo's Revenge series is now available. The Revolution will not be planned in the checkout line at Walmart or in the line to punch out on Friday afternoon or at happy hour. It's all right here. The Geronimo's Revenge Trilogy from CWG Press. Crusher versus the Empire, Crusher in Wonderland, and now Geronimo's Revenge. All three books in the series available at Amazon. The May issue of Penn Magazine is now available online at pennmagazine.us. America, the Evil Empire. Penn Magazine is named in honor of Penn Jones Jr., one of the first honest researchers into the John Kennedy murder by the U.S. Deep State, which was the opening big event leading to the murders of Martin King and Robert Kennedy, Oklahoma City, 9/11, Sandy Hook, Boston, San Bernardino, Orlando, Las Vegas, Parkland, etc. Go here to read Penn Magazine, P-E-N-N, magazine.us. Issues also available in flip page format at archive.org. Thank you.
Our first guest of the evening is Phil Ferruccio. Phil joins us every from Port Orange, Florida, and here he comes right now.
Good evening, Working Stiffs. This is an interesting piece. I think you might find it if you're not really students of history like I am, or of conspiracy theories like I am. Fake news is fake America. You know, sometimes I have to get to the point on key events that have shaped our future as a republic. Let it be known that what I'm about to share with you, my readers, are things I cannot prove, yet strongly believe to be true. Robert Stinnett wrote his book, Day of Deceit, in 1999, to suggest that the FDR administration knew of the upcoming attack by the Japanese at Pearl Harbor, and allowed it to happen. Okay, Stinnett's rationale from his extensive research was that FDR needed to get us into World War II and was facing much opposition here at home. Okay, Dusko Popov, a Serbian double agent during the war, wrote his autobiography, Spy Counter Spy, in 1974, whereupon he stated that in around March of 1941, he personally met with J. Edgar Hoover. At that meeting, he passed along information obtained by him directly from the German intelligence service, the Abwehr, of the planned Japanese attack at one of our Pacific naval bases, most likely Pearl Harbor, set for around the end of 1941. Former New Orleans prosecutor and judge Jim Garrison wrote his 1988 book On the Trail of the Assassins, which Oliver Stone based his 1991 blockbuster film JFK on. Both the book and the film make a compelling case that Lee Harvey Oswald was not the killer and may not even have been involved in the conspiracy, except as a setup patsy. Garrison and Stone both felt that JFK's assassination was literally a coup d'etat orchestrated by factions deep within our own government. At least 21 witnesses to the assassination turned up dead during the years afterwards. That alone would give anyone pause to consider that the 1964 Warren Commission report was full of holes. On August 2nd of 64, the destroyer USS Maddox was said to have been attacked by the North Vietnamese. This so-called incident gave President Johnson the impetus to urge the Senate to pass the infamous Gulf of Tonkin Resolution that legalized LBJ's plans to get involved in a war there. History and lots of fine investigations have more or less proven that the whole event was faked by our government. William Pepper wrote the most spellbinding book, Orders to Kill, The Truth Behind the Murder of Martin Luther King, in 1995. Pepper researched the case for years and points the finger at various agencies and not at James Earl Ray for the plot and execution of King's murder. The interesting thing about King being murdered in April of 68 was that it was exactly 1 year after he gave his chilling speech at the Riverside Church, coming out publicly for the first time against the war in Vietnam. He made sure to call our country the greatest purveyor of evil. On top of that, in April of 68, he was in Memphis to offer solidarity to the mostly black Memphis sanitation workers who were on strike. This was a far cry from the Martin Luther King who spent most of his activism marching and speaking out for civil rights. The Killing of Robert Kennedy, a book by Dan Moldea, has just been re-released for the 50th anniversary of RFK's murder. In the book, Moldea covers lots of details concerning who may have been involved and why. Once again, he, along with countless other investigators, throw out the assertion that Sirhan Sirhan was the gunman. interesting point here. Before the trial of Sirhan, the government had psychiatrist Dr. Jolien West examine him. Dr. West had an extensive background working for covert operations spanning back to the Korean War. He had Jack Ruby as a patient after Ruby was imprisoned for killing Lee Harvey Oswald. The real interesting fact is that later on, after the Sirhan case, Dr. West worked in a program run at Vacaville Prisons of California Medical Facility and had none other than inmate Donald DeFries as a patient in a program to treat, quote, violent offenders. DeFries, a few years later, became the leader, known as Field Marshal Sink, of the obtuse homegrown terrorist group calling itself the Symbionese Liberation Army, which kidnapped Patty Hearst, who Dr. West also treated after her capture or liberation. And of course, DeFries was killed during that event. There have been suggestions by other researchers over the years that DeFries was both a police informant and an agent provocateur, probably under mind control. In the spring of 1990, Saddam Hussein of Iraq was angry with Kuwait for basically two major reasons. A, he had to loan money from them. He had to borrow money from them for his decade-long war with Iran and felt that they should erase his country's debt because Iraq did all the fighting and dying. B, Hussein felt that Kuwait was angle drilling underwater Iraqi oil in violation of their sovereign rights for it. Things got testy, and Bush Sr. sent U.S. Ambassador April Glaspie to meet with Hussein, who was at the time one of our cherished allies in that region. The transcript of that meeting on July 25, 1990, where she says, "I have direct instructions from President Bush to improve our relations with Iraq. We have considerable sympathy for your quest for higher oil prices, the immediate cause of your confrontation with Kuwait. As you know, I lived here for years and admire your extraordinary efforts to rebuild your country. We know you need funds. We understand that, and our opinion is that you should have the opportunity to rebuild your country. We can see that you have deployed massive numbers of troops in the South. Normally, that would be none of our business, but when this happens in the context of your threat against Kuwait, then it would be reasonable for us to be concerned. For this reason, I received instruction to ask you, in the spirit of friendship, not confrontation, regarding your intentions. Why are your troops massed so close to Kuwait's borders?" Hussein answers her, "Well, as you know, for years I have made every effort to reach a settlement on our dispute with Kuwait. There is to be a meeting in 2 days. I am prepared to give negotiations only this one more brief chance. When we, the Iraqis, meet with the Kuwaitis and we see there is hope, then nothing will happen. But if we are unable to find a solution, then it will be natural that Iraq will not accept death." April Glaspie answered him, "What solutions would be acceptable?" Hussein said, "If we could keep the whole of the Shah of Iraq, our strategic goal in our war with Iran, we will be making concessions to the Kuwaitis. But if we are forced to choose between keeping half of the Shah and the whole of Iraq, in Saddam's view, including Kuwait, then we will give up all of the Shah to defend our claims on Kuwait, to keep this whole of Iraq in the shape we wish to be in. What is the United States opinion on this?" She answers him, "We have no opinion on your Arab-Arab conflicts, such as your dispute with Kuwait. Secretary of State Baker has directed me to emphasize the instruction, first given to Iraq in the 1960s, that the Kuwait issue is not associated with America." Well, we know the rest. He attacked Kuwait and became public enemy number one, blah, blah, blah. A mere 10 years later, in September of 2001, the Twin Towers were taken down like pancakes, and this set off our never-ending war on terror. David Ray Griffin, in 2008, wrote 9/11, the New Pearl Harbor, his investigation into what really may have gone down that tragic day, and the why, along with the how, of it. Once again, the book refutes the findings of the 9/11 Commission report that it was just a small band of terrorists led by Osama bin Laden that did the heinous act on their own, without any aid from other covert agencies of our government, maybe? In the aftermath of the 9/11 horror, many sources have shown that the Bush-Cheney cabal always had their sights on Iraq. In July of 2002, the inner circle of the British government, met to discuss the Iraq situation. And here's what went on in their meeting, according to Wikipedia, by the way. The most controversial paragraph is a report of a recent visit to Washington by head of the Secret Intelligence Service, Sir Richard Dearlove, known terminology as C. C reported on his recent talks. This is from the British notes. C reported on his British on his recent talks in Washington. There was a perceptible shift in attitude. Military action was now seen as inevitable. Bush wanted to remove Saddam through military action, justified by the conjunction of terrorism and weapons of mass destruction. But the intelligence and facts were being fixed around the policy. The National Security Council had no patience with the UN route and no enthusiasm for publishing material on Iraq's regime record. This was there was little discussion in Washington of the aftermath after military action. The Defense Secretary said that the U.S. had already began spikes of activity to put pressure on the regime. No decision had been taken, but he thought that most likely timing in the U.S. minds for military action was, would be around January, with the timeline beginning 30 days before the U.S. congressional elections. Well, the Foreign Secretary said he would discuss it with Colin Powell this week. It seemed clear that Bush had made up his mind to take military action, even if the timing has not been decided. But the case was thin. Saddam was not threatening his neighbors, and his WMD capability was less than those of Libya, North Korea, or Iran. We should work on a plan for an ultimatum to Saddam to allow back the UN inspectors. This would also help with the legal justification for the use of force. Unquote. Well, folks, we all know what transpired afterwards. As the country that we true patriots love, along with our British stooges, had committed a most heinous action, worse than even the Vietnam debacle. The fake news empire was working on steroids, and it still is with our illegal and immoral dabbling in other Middle Eastern affairs. Isn't it time for the majority of our fellow citizens to stop believing in the lies and disinformation that passes as truthful news? Thank you.
And now it's time for Revolution College, underground night school in the basement of the abandoned humanities building, Thursday. The course description, what the hell is going on around here? Vince Lombardi.
Real change can come through knowledge of what the FBI and CIA are doing to this country through propaganda. They've done it for decades, all over the world. Why not here? Especially here. The American system needs to be overhauled. We know that. What we need is a nonviolent revolution. The biggest battle is being fought with information. The American people are an incredible untapped force for good, but they don't really know much of anything about what's really going on. So what needs to happen is the base work for revolution, awareness. We just don't know enough. The battle of ideas is percolating below the surface. It is a battle the corporate state is steadily losing. An increasing number of Americans are getting it. Once ideas shift for a large portion of a population, once the vision of a new society grips the popular imagination, the old regime is finished. That is where we are headed.
Tonight's Revolution College lesson.
It is up to Europe whether or not the Earth dies in nuclear Armageddon. European governments do not realize their potential to save the world from Washington's aggression. Because the Western Europeans are accustomed to being Washington's vassal states since the end of World War II. And the Eastern and Central Europeans have accepted Washington's vassalage since the collapse of the Soviet Union. Vassalage pays well, if all the costs are not counted. By joining NATO, the Eastern and Central Europeans permitted Washington to move U.S. military presence to Russia's borders. This military presence on Russia's borders gave Washington undue confidence that Russia also could be coerced into a vassal state existence. Despite the dire fate of the two finest armies ever assembled, Napoleon's Grand Army and that of Germany's Wehrmacht, Washington hasn't learned that the two rules of warfare are don't march on Russia, don't march on Russia. Because of Europe's subservience to Washington, Washington is unlikely to learn this lesson before Washington marches on Russia. Washington, in its hubristic idiocy, has already begun this march piecemeal with the coup in Ukraine and with its attacks on Syrian military positions. What can stop this before it explodes into war is Eastern and Central Europe's decision to disengage as enablers of Washington's aggression. There are no benefits to Europe of being in NATO. Europeans are not threatened by Russian aggression, but they are threatened by Washington's aggression against Russia. If the American neoconservatives and their Israeli allies succeed in provoking a war, all of Europe could be destroyed forever. What's wrong with European politicians that they take this risk with the peoples that they govern? Europe is still a place of beauty, constructed by humans over the ages, architecturally, artistically, intellectually. The museum should not be destroyed. Once free of Washington's vassalage, Europe could even be brought back to creative life. Europe is already suffering economically from Washington's illegal sanctions against Russia, forced upon Europeans by Washington, and from the millions of non-European refugees flooding the European countries, fleeing from Washington's illegal wars against Muslim peoples. Wars that Americans are forced to fight for the benefit of Israel. What do Europeans get for the extreme penalties imposed on them as Washington's vassals? They get nothing but the threat of Armageddon. A small handful of European leaders get enormous subsidies from Washington for enabling Washington's illegal agendas. Just take a look at Tony Blair's enormous fortune, which is not the normal reward for a British prime minister. Europeans, including the leaders, have much more to gain from being connected to the Russia-China Silk Road project. It's the East that is rising, not the West. The Silk Road would connect Europe to the rising East. Russia has undeveloped territory full of resources. Siberia, larger than the United States. On a purchasing power parity basis, China is already the world's largest economy. Militarily, the Russian-Chinese alliance is much more than a match for Washington. If Europe had any sense, any leadership would tell Washington, bye-bye. What is the value to Europe of Washington's hegemony over the world? How do Europeans, as opposed to a handful of politicians receiving bags full of money from Washington, benefit from their vassalage to Washington? Not one benefit can be identified. Washington's apologists say that Europe is afraid of being dominated by Russia. So why aren't Europeans afraid of their 73 years of domination by Washington, especially a domination that is leading them into military conflict with Russia? Unlike Europeans and Russians, Americans have scant experience with wartime casualties. Just one World War I battle, the Battle of Verdun, produced more casualties than the battle deaths that U.S. has experienced in all the wars of its existence, beginning with the Revolutionary War for independence from Britain. The World War I Battle of Verdun, which took place prior to the U.S. entry into the war, was the longest and most costly battle in human history. An estimate in 2000 found a total of 714,231 casualties, 377,231 French, 337,000 German, an average of 70,000 casualties a month. Other recent estimates increased the number of casualties to 976,000 during the battle, with 1,250,000 suffered at Verdun during the war. In contrast, U.S. casualties for World War I after U.S. entry, 53,402 battle deaths, 200,000 non-mortal woundings. Here's a list of U.S. battle deaths from the War of Revolution through the Global War on Terror.
We'll see you next Thursday night for the next session of Revolution College Underground in the Abandoned Humanities Building, Thursday.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now for another episode of The Adventures of Orson B. Riddle, crisis actor of Paducah. Orson sits on his cement front steps, smoking to watch traffic, but there is no traffic. Inside on the walls above the TV and Xbox in a brown frame is his membership certificate to the Crisis Actors Guild, and on the kitchen table, he still has to mail it yet, is his membership application to the Propaganda Movie Actors Association. His suit tape lays wide open on the bed because he just got home from Florida, and you can't really see the stickers he has collected from Oklahoma, Texas, California, New York, Boston, Connecticut, Nevada. Orson B. Riddle usually gets 1, 2, or maybe 3 days at home until it's time to pack up his makeup kit, head bandages, prosthetics, and go to the next big event. For 3 years, he worked at Walmart, and then he saw this ad on Craigslist, and he's never looked back. He's got his laptop open and he's reading, even though he's been told to only watch TV for his news. He squints his eyes as he reads.
White House Correspondents' Dinner. Very funny. Why do they act like humans here, but on the regular TV news shows, they act like robots? What's happening here? Why don't they make fun of the charades of Las Vegas, Boston, 9/11? Found a passport in that gigantic pile of debris? Shanksville? Plane parts? I don't see how plane parts. Do you? Plenty of material here. Two dead deputies from Broward County who would not go into a building with a shooter in there? What's the matter, guys? Spiders? Robbie Parker, Carlos Arredondo, Gene Rosen. Come on, that's a whole act right there. H. Wayne Carver, a lying fat state mortician with the name Carver. Come on, guys. Don't tell us you can't think of anything. Nothing? Colbert? John Stewart, even Rachel Maddow should be able to come up with one joke. I know, right? Orson goes inside for his cigarettes, walking right past the TV on full blast as it's supposed to be. Then comes back out and continues to read on his computer.
Join us next week for yet another episode of Orson B. Riddle, Crisis Actor at Paducah, sponsored by Quick Dry Oats. Hardens to a cement block in your stomach within minutes because you never know when you're going to get a good hard kick in the gut. We're there for you on the job, on the weekend, even when you sleep. Because these days, You never really know when the big hit is going to come, now do you? We're Quick Dry Oats of Minneapolis. Our next guest of the show is Frank Cordero. Frank Cordero usually joins us each week from Des Moines, Iowa, the Des Moines Catholic Worker. And today, Chuck talked to Frank in Baltimore. So let's listen to the conversation right now between Chuck and Frank Cordero.
Chuck.
Frank.
I'm sorry. Have you been trying to get a hold of me?
Yeah, I have.
I'm sorry. I just got out of the shower. I'm driving. I'm in Baltimore. I'm at Jonah House. I'm here for the 50th anniversary of the Catonsville Nine.
Okay.
Is it too late? What do you want me to do? What can I say?
Let's talk now. With
okay, all right. Well, Chuck, you caught me in at the. I've been 2 days on the road driving to Baltimore, Maryland, and I've just got arrived a couple hours ago here. I got lost and finally got to Jonah House. I'm here for the 50th anniversary celebration of the Catonsville Nine draft board raids that took place this time 50 years ago, 1968. Oh. Yeah, when nine Catholics went into a draft board in Catonsville, Maryland, a draft board that incidentally was right above the Knights of Columbus local parish building. And they extracted the files, put them in the parking lot, and then threw a man-made or homemade napalm, as Dan Berrigan aptly said, apologies, dear friends, for the burning of paper, for we cannot help but be bothered by the burning of children in Vietnam. He said it better than that, but something like that. These guys started a movement in the United States that, aside from being very symbolic and powerful witness, where many people spent lots of time in jail all over the country and lots of draft boards, they were literally effectively diminishing the draft system in the U.S. at the time. Well over 50 draft boards were hit during this time. I think the numbers are even higher. I'll find out tomorrow. So it's a time, and among that group, of course, were Dan and Phil Berrigan. They're the folks who went on, as Phil did, got married to Liz and started Jonah House, where I'm at right now. And and then they ignited after the Vietnam War. They started their protests against nuclear weapons with the Plowshares Action. I find it interesting that this is our the legacy of the Catholic left for the World War II generation, the Berrigan brothers. They picked up where Dorothy Day and Eamon Hennessy were bringing people post World War II in the Catholic worker movement. I'm just honored because I've I'm going to give a talk. So is Kathy Kelly, and then there's a number of panels. I'm just grateful that one of them is that I'm 68 years old. So there are not a lot of people that age, that World War II crowd, are still around. And it'll be more of a commentary and Thanksgiving for a generation that led the way in what resistance needs to look like. It's particularly pointed right now because right now we've got a Plowshares Action that took place April 4th on the anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King. At the Kings Bay Plowshares, seven Catholics, among them Liz McAllister, Phil Berrigan's wife and widow, and the matriarch, the grandmother of our East Coast resistance movement, and Father Steve Kelly, a Jesuit priest that can't get anybody closer in spirit and discipline to Dan Berrigan than Steve Kelly. I mean, their cadence and their preaching are almost identical, and really amazing man. Steve's done many months jail and years in jail time, a multiple Plowshares activist. A couple other people just worth mentioning. Carmen Trotta, former Des Moines Catholic worker. He's now at the New York Catholic worker. He was part of this, and so was Margaret Hennessy. She's the Martha. Martha's the granddaughter of Dorothy Day. So that was quite an experience having that happen. And I, you know, I'm going to I give a talk. I'm going to lift up those folks, talk about the history, and then I'm also going to explore the challenge that Jess and Ruby gave us.
Yeah.
The next generation, you know,
because
they're translating this kind of beat your swords in the hammer as license, biblical, divine license, human license to take responsibility for the destruction of the planet and the mechanisms that are destroying the planet, not in wartime, but in peacetime.
Yeah.
And that's the extraction of oil and how it's killing us. So that's what I drove in for 2 days. I'm very excited about it. I can give a bit of an update on Jess. She gave me a call. She's doing well. Her next destination is somewhere in the Dakotas, north or south. I'm not sure, but there's a destiny for her in a mountain in a spirit dance with some people to native spirituality. Something she's been preparing for, and I'm, you know. But y'all, if you hold, you have prayers. Prayer for Jessica and where she's going, and for Ruby where she's at, and for the Plowshares activists because they're in jail right now. The bond has not been set, and for all of us old fogies coming together here in Baltimore to celebrate a movement that certainly has enriched the Roman Catholic experience in this country for the better. I'm just really, really grateful to be here. I hope I do a decent job. So that's where I'm at.
Well, of course you will do a decent job.
Thanks.
Frank, well, thanks so much. And, I'm glad you heard from Jess and this sounds like quite an event and, we hope to hear all about it
next week.
Week, exactly.
Yes. All right, Chuck. God bless you. Thank you.
Bless you too. Thank
Thanks,
you,
brother. Bye bye. Bye.
The TV show Finding Bigfoot will end May 27th after 11 seasons. Find it on the Animal Planet Network or by sitting in the McDonald's parking lot and using their internet service. Brought to you by The Next Big Thing, we are getting dangerously close to the time when everyone will know that Bigfoot exists. We're not sure if you're ready for that, and that's why we're working overtime on new apps for you. We kind of like being one of the ones in the know, knowing about something so magical that others don't realize it yet, but soon that will not be possible. A Richard Dolan quote on this subject, the moment of disclosure, UFOs, is not the end of anything. It's the beginning of the real fight for truth. We saw demonstrations of a million people in Tahrir Square. Don't you think there might be a march of a million people on Area 51? Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, Los Alamos, maybe? I'll bet you Wack and Hut security can stop a march of 100 people, but not a million, not a million. And don't you think that just might happen? And what about opening up a new truth movement? Because after UFOs, then 9/11, JFK, underground bases, you name it, chemtrails, it's all going to be on the table. By God, what an exciting, challenging mess it's going to be. And so in other words, the moment of disclosure is not going to be the end of anything. It's the beginning for the real fight for truth, not the end.
The folks at The Next Big Thing ask you, be careful what you hope for. Huh? What happens the day Barack Obama and George W. Bush and his father have walked out on the golf course in handcuffs, charged with prior knowledge, hiding information about a felony, the attacks of 9/11? And a thoughtful U.S. Marshal puts his hand on George Sr.'s head so he does not bump it on the door, and we get the final public sneer on that career criminal. It appears on the front page of the New York Post and Time Magazine and Rolling Stone. What happens when the talk about UFOs and Bigfoot and the Wellstone murder are about details where, when, how, rather than rolling of the eyes. What happens when we have actual names and court cases and confessions and Newsweek and Wall Street Journal and New York Times front page stories about the trial of some still living principals in the JFK, RFK, and Martin Luther King Jr. murders? Our whole world will be rocked. Somebody will need to make an app for that in a darn big hurry, but, well, thanks to the folks at the Next Big Thing, it's all already in the works, guys. Things will be different. Our whole perception of life and what we should be doing in life will be changed forever. That might be scary, but it's where we need to go. Down the rabbit hole, folks. Step right up. Don't be shy. Okay, now careful. One at a time. No pushing. Everybody will get their turn. Easy now. Careful. There you go. We're the next big thing. We bring your world to your vehicle, your doorstep, and right on up to your mind.
Don't stop thinking about tomorrow. Some of you still remember the night of the Clinton inaugural balls, the singing, the dancing, the smiling, the dreams, the hopes. Remember how they gave up on health care? Remember the omnibus crime bill, the construction of dozens of new prisons? Remember the bombing of Yugoslavia for 70 days? Remember the Welfare Reform Act, the end of ADC, NAFTA, the end of jobs in America? Do you remember the pardon of Leonard Peltier? Drug running by the CIA in Mena, Arkansas? Gary Webb reports about that in the Mercury News, and later he is murdered. The sanctions on Iraq that killed 1 million people. The reversal of Glass-Steagall, which is all about the 99% and the 1%. I won't ask, and please don't tell me, if you voted for William Jefferson Clinton. Hope, change, elect Barack Obama. Remember the Democratic Party? John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, we thought everything was possible, probable. And then they blew it all away. Clinton and Obama got the message, wouldn't you say? Yesterday, all my troubles seemed so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Now it's time for our daily civics lesson. Today's topic, constitutional checks and balances. Here we go. There are three branches in the U.S. government as established by the Constitution. First, the legislative branch makes the law. Second, the executive branch executes the law. Last, the judicial branch interprets the law. Each branch has an effect on the other. Well, you've got your impeachment power and your power to declare war and your power to initiate constitutional amendments. And then you've got your veto power and revenue bills and overrides and appointments and check this, check that. Right. Hey, come here. This is my last day anyway. Tomorrow I'm going to swim to Canada if I can find the river and get me this rheumatism looked at. And an eye checkup and maybe a heart transplant if they got any that will fit an American body. Listen, this is the way it is. This is the world. This is reality. Get over it, get around it, or get used to it. If the president wants to bomb some country or kill some people, he does it. If the military or the police or anyone in government wants to put some people in jail, they do it. If the CIA or the FBI or the Pentagon wants to do something but they don't think you'll like it, they tell the newspapers and TV news and radio to lie to you, and then they do it. And you work your nine jobs to pay for all this, and if you don't like it, you want to do something about it, but you're afraid if you do something about it, something bad will happen to you, your kids, and you'll lose your nine jobs, and then where would you be? But you do it anyway, wondering when will the guys in black come visit you and cut off your electricity and your arms and your legs. And you wonder, are they even going to cut off my... You know, I think I heard where they cut off other people's, you know. And you're watching and wondering, and they're standing around watching you wonder and worry, and then you realize these guys are very, very good. They already did it.
And now, and now, cue the Rimsky-Korsakov. And now for another episode of Professor Rutherford P. Roswell's Conspiracy Corner. We find Professor Rutherford P. Roswell sitting at home, getting ready to begin his weekly podcast from his basement. He has his computer and his headset and professional-looking microphone with the fireplace glowing in front of him, and his English setter Apollo lying on the carpeted floor, feet straight in the air, sound asleep. Professor Roswell checks the time on the computer, sips his drowsy time tea, swivels in his chair, and draws the Crown Royal single malt from the glass case, turns back, sprinkles a dash into the tea, and sets the bottle on the floor near his feet. Around him on the walls are photos of Roswell and the important people he's interviewed over the decades. He receives an email notification from the network telling him the show will start soon. He smiles as he types salutations to the many listeners now showing up in the chat room from around the world. Moose Lake, hello. Fairbanks, hi there all. Vienna, hello. Rome, Dubuque, Bozeman, Bombay, Bear Creek, Sandy Holler. Hello, hello, welcome, hello.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And now, with your host, Professor Rutherford P. Roswell, it's time again for Conspiracy Corner, sponsored by Drowsy Time Tea, because sometimes it's the best you can do. It's all you can do. You did your best. Just hold some hot tea in your tired hands close to your chest and slowly fall asleep. Sleep. Sleep. Maybe put the hot cup on the desk. Sleep. Sleep. Drowsy Time Tea. Forget about it and sleep.
You. Stop whatever it is you're doing, because it really doesn't matter. As long as the persistent lie about the JFK, RFK, and MLK murders persists in this country, nothing you do, working out, going to work, eating, sleeping, talking, none of it matters. It really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. None of it matters. You do not matter. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to all. I'm so glad you're here. Let's get right to it, shall we? Syria has disappeared from the front pages of the Western press recently, and for good reason. It's not going well over there as far as the Allies are concerned. The Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons confirmed what many of us had already deduced. There were no chemical weapons present at the sites targeted by the U.S., U.K., French missiles. That's not been reported in the Western press at all. Exemplified by the eternally on-message Guardian, who haven't had a headline regarding Syria in over a week. The Royal Baby, ABBA's new song, A Stuffed Anteater, all apparently too important to be bumped from the front page. Also yesterday, the Russian and Syrian authorities transported 17 witnesses of the alleged Duma chemical attack to the Netherlands. The witnesses, including the little boy who featured strongly in the White Helmets propaganda video, spoke at a press conference before taking questions, all denied a chemical attack had taken place. This, along with Robert Fisk et al. Reporting on the ground, pretty much puts the final nail in the coffin as far as the official narrative on Duma is concerned. We nearly went to war and nearly instigated World War III on the back of a complete lie. A shocking state of affairs, but one that hasn't been covered in the Western media much. At all, really, except to quote the French ambassador to the Netherlands, who called it an obscene masquerade. An oddly strong opinion, considering neither he nor any diplomats from the US and UK were present at the event or heard the testimony of the witnesses. They all refused to attend in protest. ITB journalist Rupert Evelyn was particularly bizarre, displaying his open mind and keen sense journalistic objectivity by first accusing the witnesses of changing their story. They had not at all. then directly accusing the Russian ambassador to the OPCW of threatening a child. An incredibly odd performance. Just as we saw with the absolutely ridiculous and never retracted accusations against certain Twitter users of being bots, it seems the only recourse the MSM have when their narratives crumble is to fling abuse. Their only defense when their lies are revealed, tell more lies. It would be funny if it weren't so sad.
Conspiracy Corner, sponsored by Drowsy Time Tea. Because sometimes it's the best you can do. It's all you can do. You did your best. Just hold some hot tea in your tired hands close to your chest and slowly fall asleep. Sleep, sleep. Maybe put the hot cup on the desk or not. Sleep, sleep. Drowsy Time Tea. Forget about it and just sleep. Chuck, we've got a couple minutes till our music and our ads. And the next next segment, we'll listen to Abba Bird and Mickey Z. And you got the chance to visit with both of those. Can you give us a teaser, a taste of what we're going to hear from Abba or Mickey?
Well, we're going to hear some poems from Abba, and Mickey and I talked about the Homeless Women Project in New York City at some length, and I think it was a pretty good talk. So I'm not.
Go ahead.
Well, I just thought, since we're about out of time, I will I'll sing us out with something that you kind of started during one of your pieces.
Cool.
Yesterday, all my troubles seemed so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Suddenly, I'm not half the man I used to be. There's a shadow hanging over me. Oh, yesterday came suddenly. Why she had to go, I don't know. She wouldn't say. I said something wrong. Now I long for yesterday. Yesterday, love was such an easy game to play. Now I need a place to hide away. Oh, I believe in yesterday. She had to go, I don't know.
Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
A It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship.
Or be quiet.
Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship.
You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth.
You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Anti-aircraft guns pointed to action against unidentified aircraft in the Los Angeles area shortly after 3 a.m. Pacific War Time this morning.
We are far stronger than we were 10 weeks ago.
General Quarters, all hands at your battle station.
Be nervous about your toes. I'll do the mastermind around here.
Those who have not seen it do not know what hell looks like from the top.
Check it out every Tuesday and Saturday on Revolution Radio. It's a double dose of the internationally recognized renegade military historian, Douglas Dietrich.
You'll stay right where you are until I tell you to move out.
Yeah, that's right. Tuesdays from 10 to midnight Eastern Time. Join Douglas Dietrich as he exposes the truth in hidden history on his show, Critical Omissions. And then our human weapon of mass destruction is back once again to take your calls on Saturday night firing lines. Both from 10 to 12 p.m. Eastern Time. Only on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest of the show is Ava Byrd. Ava Byrd is a poet living in Southern California. Chuck visited with Ava earlier, and we're going to get to hear that conversation right about now.
Hi, Chuck and Mike. Happy May, and nice to have this springtime session with you guys and the audience out there. And I'm going to read a couple of poems. One will be in honor of the Earth, Mother Earth. Last month was Earth Day, which actually should be every day. But I will honor the Earth by reading that poem. This one, I'll just start out with a few new ones that I've written in the last, just this spring. This is called Visits. this magical mystery desert land, desert roads, desert sun, desert air, and desert stars. Yes, that's it. It's the desert stars. Those things up there shining, blistering up there, exploding and burning, alive, glistening, twinkles, flickering constantly like lights, up in the nights, specks of light flicks, flickers, jitters at the butterflies fluttering, those eyes, those sparks, those flits of light, those moments of just tuning in, tuning up, going out, in and out, and down those roads, lines and doubles, seeing double, seeing triple, I, the first I, down below, those sacral places, those chakras spinning out, round and round, back again, backwards, backwards, righto, then release up, up, up and away, up and up and up and away. Just take me away. Om, om, take me away. Take me to the ethers of way out there, way out there, in here, deep inside, deep in there. So deep, it's out there, way out. And there it is, right here, in there, and here. I'm out of here. I'm out. Not coming back. Not coming back here, unless it's to visit. Then I'll just fly over, fly by quick. You won't even see me. But you'll feel the breeze of a thousand thoughts suddenly, overwhelmed with feelings of WTF and holy shit, it's her. Okay, and this one is called Of Waves. Of Waves. The waves, coming and going, jumping in the waves, the unknown, yet the patterns, honorable, of water left on our lives, for living, for loving, we need it, these currents, the currencies, these waves, these flows, the ins and outs and balances, of rhythms, of sounds, of the waves, the crashing and quiet, the loudness of the water coming in, the water breaking, the water really spraying out, covering us quick. We better swim. We better know how to navigate the oceans, the waves of the world, the other world of oceans and seas. See how it can be out there. Far out, man. Dangerous waves, wild tides, loud and crazy. Like they are a-coming, coming to get you. Those waves, those tides of reminders to crash sometime. Go out there deep, ebb and low, the far out there days of really going for waves of confidence, waves of strength, waves of feeling good and bliss, and deep flying descents downhill. From there, turns. As the world turns, it burns. It's heating up over human waste and washing up, composting us, these pure and beautiful shores with waves, waves of reminders to freely flow and float and build and peak and crash and leave in its wake total peace. Okay, this one is called Afternoon Meditation. Sitting, 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 being. My time to stop, sit, think. Third eye alive, activated. Sitting cross-legged, still, silent. Sitting. Lotuses to meditate on thoughts whispering and breaths and counts. Counts to 10, counts to 108, thousands of ins and outs, to come to light, back to breaths and breathing again. Moments slowing down, clear, rewinding and deleting. Later, man, I'm much better off now. Thanks. Going to the gardens to eat leaves, playing in the dirt, rich soils, planting seeds and singing songs of Om Shanti Om. I'm going home to peace and bliss, bubble baths with fairies on clouds and floating high on living. These thoughts in sitting. And mothers, thank you. Thank you for bringing us here. Thanks for the light and life, the braces and the nightmare comforts, sick days and fevers. Still a child sometime, wishing mom was here, wishing we could have been better, better to our mother, Gaia, better to our host, this planet, this island Earth, this Shangri-La, producing sustenance for us, never stopping, giving and giving, always growing. So I'm giving back now, planting the seed growth, letting her rise and shine, reaching up to the sun, fed from the light, feeding the food, feeding the breathing ones, even the trees. This symbiosis that keeps us all oxygenated and alive. Though we forget to thank the source, this beautiful ball of light, circling and circling, shining and shining, never waiting for us to get it together, this beautiful planet, just giving life while I just sit and contemplate it all, while beaming out earth prayers, prayers for more healing, intentions of love and compassion, sending rays of light down deep and way up there, wishing and wishing for awakening, for peace on the galaxies, peace and freedom for all, into and until infinity. Okay, this one is called Bad Dreams. These streets of cities, nights crawling with creatures of strange origins. We are lost inside these dreams of others. The manufactured reality, these fake worlds, TVs and bad food, schools and drug wars, these forced vaccines, chills. I'm running scared, running through hoods of low lights and no noise. Silence, getting up, waking to the world of cars and running water. Happy showers, made it to another day, yay. Here I am, yet still scared of the chills and bills and runaway hills, angry at the chemtrail suns, fluoride water, arsenic, lead, mercury, air, factory farms, fake dead frankenfood, murder for dinner, just add salt and pepper, striving for better days ahead. Yeah, I'm working, getting up early to do it, getting up early to slay the dragons, feed the birds, love the cats, kicking to the curb, always coming at you like dodging demons and bullets. Yes, it's a full-time job, fighting off all the wild devils of society's failures, useless and dangerous governments incompetent, war-torn horror and rape and refugees, horrors and angels, trying to help while not drowning, and still breathe easily and freely while still trying to laugh and smile more than sometimes, too. Okay, thank you very much. Thanks again, Chuck and Mike. It's always great to be with you guys. Happy, wonderful spring, and I'll see you next month.
And now for another episode of the adventures of deputy and candidate for sheriff of Pecan County, Buddy Q. Twinkle. Buddy is patrolling the War on Terror Memorial Highway in South Central Alabama. He's sitting in a grove of trees, can't see a thing. He's on Twitter, on his phone, chatting with the Kremlin, presumably. Every once in a while, he has to go stop somebody, but then it's back to the trees and Twitter. He says he believes he needs to stay in constant contact.
On his day off, Buddy goes into Walmart, walks behind people in the store, dropping stuff they don't want into their cart. When they get to the checkout, they just pay for the stuff anyway, even though they don't remember putting doggy chew toys, pink flamingo lawn ornaments into their cart. They just pay for them and haul them out along with the chicken and a biscuit and the pit bull chow out to the RV as Buddy goes off in search of his next victims. Buddy is a Russian spy. Stay tuned for next week's episode of The Adventures of Deputy and Candidate for Sheriff of Pecan County, Buddy Q. Twinkle, sponsored by Lemon Fresh Borax. Also sponsors of On Babushka Kalashnikov's Corner, The View from My Piroshki Cart. When your dogs tell you the Russians pooped in the hallway while you were at work, we're there for you, protecting the homeland. Lemon Fresh Borax in the fading yellow box.
Our next guest for the show is Mickey Z. Mickey Z is a poet, a writer, and activist in New York City, Queens, Astoria, New York City. Chuck visited with Mickey earlier, and we're going to get to hear that conversation right now.
Well, it is May, and that means we get to talk to our friend Mickey Z, Mickey Zezima, from Astoria, New York City. Welcome to the show, Mick.
Thank you, as always. Happy to be here.
Okay. So, you said to me earlier it's a little bit cold up there. Are you kidding? It's May. What's going on?
Well, by the time people hear this, it will have warmed up. It's been this roller coaster in New York where it literally can swing as much as 40 degrees in the 24-hour time period. So As I speak to you, it feels like, let's say, mid-March. And by the time this airs, it's going to feel like mid-June at least. So that's where we're at right now. Welcome to the new normal.
Yeah, really? Oh, well, I suppose... The weather is just like our emotions and everything else these days.
That's a scary thought.
So how have things been going with the Homeless Women Project?
I'm busy as always. As mentioned with the, related to the weather, the needs are ever evolving in that sense where it could probably gave out the last of my winter stuff, hand warmers and so on. And actually as recent as last week, I was beginning to give out sunscreen and all that. But it's a project in which my commitment to it and the amount of times I do it is consistent. And what's tricky is it's really 24/7 in terms of fundraising and or getting material donations. And it feels like every month has its own personality. Like in the month of April, I got an abundance of material donations, but, short on finances. The reverse was in March. So that's quite a, I've never really managed something like this. So that's been an interesting, and I use the word interesting lightly, it's been a challenging, I should say, aspect of this, because the rest of it, I just basically pack up my bags, get out, get on the subway and go do the work. But what enables me to do it is the kind people, all over the world who are willing to kick in and help fund this project.
Well, hope that they'll continue and to send a bit more.
I couldn't agree possibly more.
I'm sure. Well, got any interesting vignettes from this month? People you've met, things that have happened?
It's been... there's always these dramatic ups and downs. Like just the other day, I encountered someone, a woman I hadn't seen in a while, and she informed me that she had gone to a different state in order to give birth. And honestly, I didn't even know she was pregnant because it was winter, and that was, you know, the women are dressed obviously in a heavy winter clothes.
Yeah.
And you know, she cried as she told me that because of her situation, she had to surrender custody of her son. And now at the time I had seen her, she hadn't seen him in a couple of weeks. And then within 10 or 15 minutes, I was in a different area of Manhattan and came across a woman, who uses a wheelchair and also takes care of a feline companion. And she was excitedly telling me that her caseworker said that it could be a matter of just 2 or 3 weeks and she would have housing. And I think like that 15 minute swing right there, to some degree, you know, reflects the diversity of these experiences. You know, when people say to me, you know, how do you help homeless women? The first thing I point out is that there is no monolithic concept, homeless women. They are as unique as any other group of human beings. So the answer to that question, as far as I'm concerned, is get to know them and ask them what they need. Because while they are obviously everybody has universal needs, each of them has a different story and a different circumstance, and they're at a different point in their homelessness. I've been blessed to see some women I've been doing this 18 months now, going on 19. I've been blessed to see some women get off the streets. Some have disappeared, and I'm left to just wonder where they are. And I've met women on their first day of being homeless. And then you encounter them later on, and you see how quickly they picked up the details that you need to pick up in order to survive relatively safely on the street. So, I guess that's kind of what I'm getting at, is like in terms of like anybody saying, hey, I want to offer help to whatever population it might be. The key is to, unless you're part of that population or have lived through what that population is currently living through, the probably the first bit of advice I could give is to surrender your assumptions as to what they need and how to help, and do your best to earn some trust and be able to get to know them and ask those questions. Say, you know, what is it that you need? What's your experience like? And how can I help? And don't make promises you can't keep. What I tell them all the time is, if a woman asks me, hey, do you think you can get this? I say, I always promise you I will try my best. But I don't want to be someone that says, yeah, I'll have it, and then I'm unable to pull it off. So it's been quite an education for me in terms of how to be the most a better and more effective helper, because initially I guess everyone just thinks it's just a matter of getting out there and helping, but really just with a little bit of thought and a little bit of time, you realize that nothing really is that simple. It requires a fair amount of new mindsets and also a willingness to learn from the people that you're helping.
I don't know. I'm continually amazed by the work that you put into this, and I think it's really great that you're helping them, and I really think that you do help a lot of them. I know you can't.
I think you just very smoothly transitions into another point that you can make, is that you and I have spoken many, many, many times about the different paradigms of activism and the different mindsets and motivations and actions and tactics that we choose. And I think it's always important to keep an eye on the big picture, and to, if you can contribute to systemic change, good for you. Like, you know, please do that. But when you just said, I think you helped a certain amount of women, and that's exactly it. Like, I had to, when I started this, Manhattan's not a giant island, but I thought, oh, I can cover a lot of ground. And then before you know it, when you're carrying tons of stuff and you're just one person, you begin to realize that you just, the top priority is to be as effective as possible. It isn't about trying to encounter as many homeless women as I can, but then never really being able to get back to where they are, as opposed to finding certain pockets in Manhattan where there are the most homeless women, and then doing the hard work of earning their trust and being able to return back, you know, over and over again to these areas where you become a familiar face, where even their friends, say some homeless men, will know who I am. And I could say to them, hey, have you seen so-and-so? Which corner is she on today? And I can be more of a trusted, familiar face. And that was a big transition for me as somebody who did a lot of traditional activism and tons of writing and public speaking, in which my calling card was, oh, we need to focus on the big picture. We need to see where everything connects. And I'm not downplaying that, but I'm realizing that that's not the most, in fact, it's not even close to the most effective way to actually help people who need help now. And, you know, I'll write articles pertaining to homelessness or the project that I work on. And sometimes the comments in the, you know, after the article will be along the lines of, well, that's why we have to end capitalism, and homelessness is a symptom of capitalism, and helping individuals isn't challenging the system. And I try to politely or not so politely point out that the women that I help aren't sitting around waiting for us to get our act together to smash capitalism, when in the moment they need a fresh pair of underwear and maybe some hand warmers to keep their hands warm overnight on the streets. And so if someone has a plan, you know, as the famous song goes, you say you want a revolution, I'd love to see a plan. If someone has a plan to bring down capitalism, please let me know. But in the meantime, I've decided, you know, in this section of my life, that that I can be most effective by choosing direct action to the whatever people I can meet. And it goes back to what you and I called it a hospice nurse, and then you suggested triage, which I felt was, I agreed with you, was more accurate, where you just, who's within your reach, who is helpable with the skills and resources you have. And that's basically the guiding principle here. And if there were even 20 of people like me in New York City, perhaps we could find the majority of homeless women on just on the island of Manhattan alone. But since it's just me, I do my best to be as effective as possible and to make each stop as effective as possible, as opposed to going way out of my way just for one person and not being able to reach four or five who are all in one other area. So that's a tough position to be in terms of, you don't want to miss anybody, but the goal is maximum effectiveness and consistency. And that, again, that's a powerful lesson I've had to learn.
Well, I'm sure it was a hard lesson too, but I just really appreciate what you're doing. We've run out of time as usual.
Wow.
It goes so fast. But
it does. But
hey, just keep up the good work, and you know, one of these days, somebody's going to come out there and help. And I hope that's soon.
Find some comfort at Willow's World, a variety of news, commentary and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles, a show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist
featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
Decentralization and bank annihilation. Bitcoin, Litecoin, MyCoin, YourCoin, blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now we join In Progress, another episode of The Americans. The Americans is brought to us by Crisis Actors of the Homeland, Operation Mockingbird, Operation Northwoods, COINTELPRO, and by Kraft and Blackwater, bringing you Aurora, Tucson, Orlando, the Boston bombing, Sandy Hook, San Bernardino, Charlottesville, and so much more.
The Americans dream of marshmallow clouds and lollipop lanes and TV towns, while the world wails, fists clenched, tears streaming. The Americans dream of rocket ships, fireworks, freedom, and alleluia, while they sleep on through the alarm, the house afire. It's true that the newcomers to Washington, D.C. are different than ever before, but after all is said and done, they are Americans. Construction's underway for the wall around the Washington, D.C. beltway to drain the swamp with an impressive culvert system to separate the White House, the FBI, the CIA, the Pentagon, the Congress, and the Washington Press Corps from normal human beings. Scattered around the job site are the wooden boards to be tacked up all around the new wall with a message. Let me put it this way. Well, 9/11 was a U.S. deep state operation, probably subcontracted for execution to the Israelis. The entire Washington swamp has been, since 9/11, accomplished after the fact by helping to maintain the cover-up. If this is brought into light, then thousands of political careers are going to crash and burn into the scandal. Well, after the Winter Olympics in Ping Pong, South Korea, everyone kind of split, went their own way. Mark, the most dangerous blogger on earth, went somewhere. Who knows, maybe back to the basement. Randall from Stevens Point was spotted in Baraboo. And the Bubbas have continued on their I Just Won a RV on the Price is Right world tour. Headed out of South Korea, headed to Damascus is what the word is. While Cosmo and Imelda Nutt, after having bowled at ping pong pints and pins against the Korean president, Moon Sun Yo-Hung Lo, and Mrs. Hung Lo, boarded Air Force One for a bowling tournament in Atchison, Kansas. For weeks, they'd been in Atchison, Kansas, at the Midwest Bowling Congress. Now the Nutts have returned to the White House, tired, still wearing the same shirt of their sponsor, Ali's House of Jihad, because they'd been told they should all always wear them as respect for their sponsor. They'd lost in the last frame of the championship match to Carl's Discount Online Surgical Supplies of Emporia and left Atchison by Greyhound bus the same afternoon. Having not been back to Washington since they quickly organized a big Dollar Signs Boobs and Tanks Festival to replace the traditional Cherry Blossom Festival. Cosmo lugged the second place trophy down the helicopter steps, saluted the Marine with it, and conked himself in the forehead, but nobody saw. I know, right? Everybody saw. Then they hurried inside, because they needed to organize this week's camo ball, this time in the Rose Garden. The Child Left Behind and Skippy the Construction Worker and self-taught on YouTube demolition expert have been carrying boxes all this time. Secrets from the Basement Maintenance of Secrets office out to the street on Pennsylvania Avenue, where they set the boxes open to the wind and let the papers fly wherever they may. People everywhere were picking up the papers, reading them out loud, running to show them to others. They found one box full of bits of paper, torn up but still readable. Gulf of Tonkin, Sinking of Maine, Weapons of Mass Destruction, Incubators. And in this one particular full piece of paper, the Child Left Behind held it up and said, "Hey, look." Skippy, the construction worker, self-taught on YouTube demolition expert, said, "Go ahead, read it out loud. Dear Diary, many of my colleagues are unhappy about the recent events in Syria. They're unhappy that Assad is still in power. However, I see the metaphorical glass as being half full. In a recent poll, 58% of Americans support the bombing of Syria and 19% have no opinion. This is wonderful news, and it shows how the vast majority of people are easily manipulated and are simply apathetic. In a democracy, the most important but least understood tool is propaganda. Let me share with you the fundamentals of a successful propaganda campaign. Here are the five rules of public relations, aka propaganda. Keep the message simple. Make it emotional. Don't allow nuances or debates. Demonize the opposition. Keep repeating the message. Rule number one, that the principal message has to be simple so that even a five-year-old can understand. In this case, it was Assad used chemical weapons to kill innocent Syrians. The secondary message was we should do something about it. Everyone who watched TV or read the mainstream social media got this message loud and clear. Rule number two, make it emotional. Propaganda is just marketing. In fact, the phrase public relations was coined to replace propaganda when the latter became a dirty word after World War I. Every good commercial has an emotional aspect to it. Emotions stop you from thinking and analyzing. Thus, while selling Pepsi, marketers use sexy women. Selling a war requires evoking fear and or anger. About 120 years ago, when the U.S. wanted to steal Cuba from Spain, it relied upon the exact playbook. "You furnish the pictures, I'll furnish the war," said newspaper oligarch William Randolph Hearst to his cartoonist. The pictures portray dying children and brutal Spanish authorities. Today, the U.S. government tells the white helmets, "You furnish the videos, we'll furnish the war." The same technique used over and over. Remember during Iraq War I, when a girl testified before the Congress that Iraqi soldiers were killing newborn babies in incubators? Of course, it turned out to be fake news. The girl turned out to be the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador. The Syrian war is also a great study in the use of emotional language. Worst chemical attack in Syria in years. International outrage. Shocked the world. Horrific, deadly, ghastly, heinous chemical attack, etc. Also, the Syrian government is always referred to as regime. Assad is always a dictator or a butcher who kills his own people. Every word and phrase is designed to have an emotional impact. Rule number three, no debate allowed. The media and the pundits left absolutely no doubt who the culprit was. Within minutes after the release of pictures and videos, everyone was blaming Assad. It didn't matter if you listened to ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, Fox, or read the New York Times, WAPO or HUFPO. Everyone was singing the same tune. Tucker Carlson was the only mainstream person who went off the script, but, well, we're taking care of him. This kind of consistency is really important in a successful propaganda campaign. No one should be allowed to consider other alternatives. Could the attack be staged? Could it be a false flag? Could it be fake? How do we know when and where the videos were taken? Why is it that Assad's chemical weapons kill only children and civilians, never the jihadists? Why do the attacks happen only when Assad is winning, etc.? There's also no discussion of evidence or proofs. We see pictures and videos, that's enough. We have a doctor on site who says it's sarin, chlorine gas. End of story. Nobody discusses options such as, should we send an international team of doctors and experts to the site? Should we wait for an autopsy? Should we get Assad to answer these charges? And so on. The U.S. establishment is the jury, judge, and the prosecutor. The witness is Al-Qaeda, who supplies the pictures and the videos, but the average person doesn't know that either. The secondary message was also never debated. Even if you assume the Syrian government used chemical weapons, why should the U.S. do something about it? Is it a moral obligation that only falls on the U.S.? Is it a legal obligation? Does the U.S. intervene every time and any time some country uses chemical weapons? How about non-chemical weapons? No such discussions are permitted. Even the bombing was so ridiculous, the average person doesn't notice anything suspicious. For example, we bombed the Barzeh Research Facility that has been inspected and cleared by the OPCW many times, including once in November 2017. Fact is, it's a civilian research and educational center. Furthermore, the OPCW team had just arrived in Syria on April 13 when the trio of US, UK, France bombed the sites. Wouldn't it make sense to send the team to inspect the building before bombing them? Also, if the buildings really had chemical weapons, wouldn't bombing them disperse the chemicals and kill thousands of civilians nearby? Real proof of the civilian nature of these buildings is that within a couple of hours after the bombing, there were Syrian journalists and soldiers walking through the rubble of these lethal chemical weapons factories. Thinking only complicates matters and ruins everything. That's why propaganda has to keep everything simple. Rule number four, you have to viciously attack anyone who questions the official narrative. We did a great job of attacking independent journalists and bloggers. Vanessa Beely, Eva Bartlett, Twitter influencers such as at Partisan Girl, at Eon56789, were all maligned as Russian bots. Eon even got banned from Twitter for a few days. Sites such as 21st Century Wire and Russia Insider were brought down by their hackers during the strikes on Syria. Rule number five, repetition, key in any successful campaign, selling a product, a politician, or a war. Thus, the media saturated the airwaves and the internet with shocking language, pictures, and videos. The West really has only one media outlet, but it comes in hundreds and thousands of different names in order to give the illusion of choice and diversity. That's when the same message is repeated so many times by so many people, it becomes the truth.
Join us next week for yet another episode of The Americans, when we will see Cosmo Nutt still pondering whether he should take up professional pie eating or start up his own weekly podcast, Dollar Signs, Tanks, and Boobs.
Well, it's been another long week in Moonrock Lake, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. Father Ralph is pastor of Good God, What's It Good For? Catholic Parish in Moonrock Lake. It's his home. He grew up in this town. He slid his rolling chair to his desk, tugged hard on the middle drawer, raked through the vanilla folders, and found the old homily he wanted to give again that Sunday. Maybe now was the time. The altar area smelled of the branches of evergreen curled around the toes of St. Joseph and Mary on either side of the altar that nobody took down from last Christmas or the Christmas before. As the song or saying or something goes, the revolution will not be televised. You can't catch it after work or tape it for later. The revolution is live. And it will not happen unless you do something. The last word hummed like trapped angry bees inside the microphone. Ralph pushed on the middle bar of his glasses, looked at the back door for the bishop. Out of his peripheral vision, he checked both side doors for the troops that would march him from the altar to the city jail. If we do nothing, if we shake hands after Mass and agree that all is well, we mean that all is well with us. All is well in our home, on our block. And that's all that matters. And then we are the problem. He paused again. When I lived in that nice neighborhood with the soft breeze, the distant call of the train engine, I was certain I was in a good spot. Without ever really sitting down to think about it, I was absolutely sure before my feet hit the floor each morning that things were in place. Everything in alphabetical order, counted and blessed. And I was wrong. And now, what this country needs more than cheap gas or friendly hometown banking is a democracy movement. We need someone, some skinny, tired, brave soul, some old man on his way home from Safeway some afternoon, willing to sit in Tiananmen Square and say, enough is enough. One person could do something. For lack of one courageous man on the Warren Commission, generations have lived entire lives in a fantasy world of Ferris wheels and mirrors. Kennedy was going to bring us out of Vietnam. Eisenhower, before him, warned of the influence of the military-industrial complex, those people who make money from weaponry. And then those forces took Kennedy out, as he was making some sort of peace with the Soviet Union as well. And so tens of thousands of young Americans were slaughtered in Vietnam, thousands of American families with a forever thorn in their side, and Nixon and Ford, Carter, Reagan, Bush, Clinton, Bush, were able to continue to make money from war, from death, from a slug of metal formed in a young Iowan's hands in some small town bullet factory, heating the cool morning air, making its way into the bone and viscera and brain matter and memories of a young man on the other side. Lyndon Johnson did it, didn't he? He wanted to be president so bad he could taste it. And then he saw he was shut out of the Kennedy administration, and before him he saw 4 more years of John and 8 each of Robert and Ted. He had to shit now or forever hold it. Priest smiled with his slightly bucked teeth and wavy hair that made him look for a moment like Bobby Kennedy. We all know that. But nobody has ever actually uttered those words in America. Not the librarian in Moonrock Lake, or the produce manager at Supermart, or the superintendent of the Moonrock Lake Public Schools. Responsible people, we assume. He squeezed the wood, smiled, and looked up at the ceiling fans twirling, as he recalled the news that had shattered the quiet so many years ago. So I bring up Kennedy, he said matter-of-factly, as a shoe salesman saying that brown was the going color this year. Well, no, he was not Christ. He was not resurrected. He certainly was not a saint. He's a sinner, through and through, just like me, just like you. He was a Catholic, yes. No big deal. Anybody can become a Catholic. I bring it up because it's what is on my mind. Many of you do not remember John Kennedy. Many of us remember nothing but. Where do these thoughts of John Kennedy, his brother Robert Martin Luther King Jr., come from? All mortal men, but in my mind, heroes, just as Jesus is a hero of mine. And to be a hero of mine, you have to do one thing. Ralph put up his crooked right pointer finger, the finger that had been stomped on. He held it over his head out toward the congregation. You have to go and get yourself killed. He held the finger in the air until it became the focus of the room. Couples with their arms interlocked on the pew behind the heads of their children stared at the finger. Ralph meant to be pointing straight up toward the ceiling in exclamation. Actually, his broken finger was more of a comma. You can't score six touchdowns on one night, be my hero. Ralph spoke loudly, pausing, turning this way and that, using all of his homiletics textbook skills. You cannot have 20-inch biceps, 30-inch waist, and be my hero. He stopped, estimated 3 seconds, impatient to keep going. You cannot go to work each day, pay your bills, keep your kids in college and your wife happy, and play errorless third base for the church softball team, and be my hero. He put his hand down his parentheses. I see these guys who drive their little cars into the lot at the elevator every morning and leave every night. They do this without fail for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, maybe 40 years. They drive in each morning at the same time. They leave at the same time. Same route. Look the same way before turning. Park the car in the same spot at work. Same place at home. Now, to some people, that image is one of supreme heroism. The loyalty, the work ethic, the steady nature of the man going to work each day, earning his daily bread for his family, that they may prosper and live and grow and also maintain their routines. I am weird. I see it as cowardice. I really do. I know some of you are going to have trouble with that. That's okay. I see it as immoral, boorish, dull behavior. Because you see, during those years, that man is going to work, maintaining a certain lifestyle. People around the world are dying from poverty, from war, what have you. And on some of those days, that man is going to work and coming home while his country is at war, outright bombing people in other countries. They're dying. And yet, he parks in the same spot, goes home at the same time. It's nothing unusual. His parents, wife, children, friends expect nothing less. But is it the Christian response? Hardly. The old priest paused, shoved the finger again into the air, turned slowly to the right, then to the left. He put his hand down and gripped the podium. You have to go and get yourself killed. So Christ, King, Kennedy, Wellstone, they did not just die. They had to be killed. If I can offer one thing to you this fine morning, my brothers and sisters, it is this. He leaned forward, whispered into the microphone, make the sons of bitches kill you. Now Ralph did not care if they liked him. The bones of his jaw showed like ripples in the water, pretending a shark below. He made direct eye contact with three people, as he'd been taught, not long enough to confront, but enough to show he was not afraid. Don't seek to live so damn long you finally have to be unplugged. Make the bastards come get you. Make their terrible plans, hunt you down, fill you full of holes, just as they did our Lord Jesus Christ. And take the chance. The chance. taken by Jesus, the skinny guy with no money, no family, no friends, no career, no papers or books published, with only this one full-court desperation shot at the big time, one card to play that might mean he would ever amount to something, take the chance that God is God. The old priest pushed his papers together, looked up like Walter Cronkite at the end of the newscast, and smiled. Now, let us pray. And that's the news from Moonrock Lake, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the journalists and Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average. And that wraps up another episode of the New American Dream Show. We thank you for joining us. We hope you'll be back next week and every week right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Remember, it's listener-supported radio, and they deserve your support. Thank you, Mike, and good night.
Thank you, Chuck, for all you do, all the interviews, the technical guru stuff, everything that makes this show possible. And thanks to our guests, Ava Bird, Mickey Z, Phil Ferruggio, and Frank Cordero. And so good night to my friends, Chuck and Lorraine. Stay warm down there. Good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. Good night, Charlie Hebdo. Good night, Don Hawksprung. Good night, Ken Leigh. Good night, Muhammad Atta. Good night, Omar Mateen. Good night, Noah Posser. Good night, Crystal Campbell. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Tra-la, it's May, the lusty month of May, that darling month when everyone throws self-control away. It's time to do a wretched thing or two, and try to make each precious day one you'll always rue. It's May, the month of yes, you may. The time for every frivolous whim, proper or im. It's wild, it's gay, uplosh in every way. The birds and bees with all their vast amorous past gaze at the human race aghast. The lusty month of May. Thank you, everyone. Good night.
Kid, what do you see? Homes being foreclosed. People working 2-3 jobs just to put food on the table and still drowning in debt. Don't get me wrong. This country is founded on great ideals and principles. They've all been ruined by the banks. Open your eyes to the banks that are robbing you. You know who my favorite president was?
Who?
Thomas Jefferson. Because he saw all of this coming and tried to stop it. He fought the banks. JFK too, and they killed him for it. The banking institution is more dangerous than an army, he said. He also said that every generation needs a revolution, Jimmy. The American dream is just that. Just a dream. War is a continuation of politics, only by other means. Politics is a continuation of economics by other means. This is our bank. This is our war. And this is our plan of attack.
Banks have become an essential threat to our democracy. So consider this
justice.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet.
Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution. Radio!
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they a government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being!
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio of freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves